As all parties are aware, the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief. The respondent will have 15 minutes. And then finally, the appellant will have 5 minutes of rebuttal. Whenever you're ready, just approach the microphone. You can adjust it to your level up and down. And you can begin by telling us who you are in a loud, clear voice, please.
You can hear me. Okay, we'll try that. Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Suzanne Senecal-Hill. I'm an assistant state public defender representing appellant Joseph Rezac. A jury found Mr. Rezac guilty of making threats of violence based on, a comment he wrote on a dating website called meetme.com. Mr. Rezac raises two issues before this court, but because our time is so limited, with the court's permission, I would like to focus on the first issue, which is the sufficiency of the evidence. And Mr. Rezac is asking this court to conclude that the state's evidence is insufficient because when it comes to criminalizing a person's words, context matters. And by that, I mean the state is required to prove that a person's spoken or written words, no matter how offensive or disagreeable they may be, actually constitute a true threat in the context the words were spoken and written. We require this because a person's constitutional right to free speech is so important and it must be protected, and that is why it's only words that constitute a true threat that can be criminalized. The state would like you to focus on a couple of passages within that entire comment that Mr. Rezac posted, but that's not what the law requires. It's not what the law allows. This court has to look.
Ms. Senecal-Hill, what if the passage just said, I will shoot up a mall killing at least 20 people and killing myself? I assume if that's all he said, would you agree that that's enough to convict him of terroristic threats?
I think this court is going to hear me say a lot today that the answers you're seeking rise and fall on context. So perhaps.
Well, the context is that's all he said.
Well, then, yes, that's a, I mean, that's a,
well,
a much
I'm
more
difficult. Well, I'm glad we agree on that.
That's a much more difficult argument for me to make, but that's
well,
not
be a hopeless one, actually.
Perhaps, but I would still make it. No, but that's not what we have here. You have to look at the context, and you have to look at the whole post, not just the last part of it. The whole post is contingent on all these fanciful things that may or may not ever come to fruition. And it's also, you have to look at the context in which it was written. This isn't a Facebook post where his friends are reading it. This is a dating website whose headquarters is in New Jersey, and the post is in response to true love can conquer any problem. And the post is, the comment is contrarian in nature. It might be inarticulate. It might actually be offensive. But in the context with which it was written, it's not a true threat.
Right, but the jury, he testified, right?
He did.
And he explained that context. So the jury heard all of that. So does that not, why would we, you see what I'm getting at is why would we reweigh that if the jury did hear his explanation of context and didn't buy it?
Because there's a difference between what the jury was told and what, as a matter of law, the state is required to prove. And we're looking at what constitutes a true threat. And true threats are those statements where the speaker means to communicate a serious expression of intent to commit an act of unlawful violence.
Well, and counsel, so the definition of true threat has been stated variously. And your quote is certainly an accurate one. Another one that the U.S. Supreme Court has used is to say that it's that the threat or the statement is such that it creates a reasonable apprehension that the defendant will act according to the statement. And here, the state did offer evidence that when the defendant's post was read, and the entire post by the Meet Me staffer, that led the staffer to notify the St. Cloud police, right, because of the language. In the post. Now, you want to argue about what the post really meant to this defendant, his subjective intent, and that was definitely submitted to the jury in this case. But when a reasonable person reviewed that post, they apprehended it to be a true threat.
That's not what the record reflects, Your Honor. The record reflects that Meet Me has a big brother, and Meet Me was certainly concerned about this language. There's social network sites always have a big brother. There's always a concern about what posts are, and some posts are deleted or people are put in, you know, Facebook jail and things like that. But the it was a concern.
By the defense that this was some sort of an algorithm that allowed me to then notify the St. Cloud Police. I didn't see that anywhere in this record.
But it's
instead,
also...
it was that the St. Cloud Police got a phone call relaying the post because the social networking website was concerned. So that's actually a paraphrase.
And that's fine to have that concern. That's their job, is to have that concern. That's different from, is it a criminal act? Is it a threat of violence? That those are two.
No, I'm only saying this is evidence in the record.
Sure, sure.
No,
but that's.
But you asked for whether this is sufficient, right?
Yeah.
And we do have that, you know, outside reasonable interpretation of the defendant's post. Right?
But the reasonable.
And we also have the police response. What did the police do when they got a copy of that post?
Well, so the thing.
They sent a squad to the Crossroads Mall, right?
But he doesn't reference the Crossroads Mall, and we're not.
No, he doesn't.
And they're not, right, subjectively they did. That, you know, there's a difference between subjectively what happened and what the objective standard is. Trying to peel this back, taking it a step back to Meet Me. Meet Me never said, hey, this is a threat of violence, you guys need to charge this. That's not what the record shows. The record shows that Meet Me was concerned. And yes, they did report it to the police. And yes, I don't argue necessarily that the police couldn't investigate this. What I'm saying is after you investigate it and you put it in the context of the legal parameters of what is a true threat, it's not there. The police officers have a subjective belief that he was referring to Crossroads Mall, but he's not in a small town of 200 people 300 miles from nowhere. He's in St. Cloud. He references a mall, but you also have to look at it in the context. It's not simply pulling out, I will shoot up 20 people at a mall. It's, this will happen, this will happen, this will happen, and
so
then this will happen.
On the conditions within the post itself, that's how I read your
It is because you have to look at the entire context. You can't just pull those two sentences out of his post.
And you're right, the law supports you on that. I mean, there are a number of cases that talk about the importance of reading the statement that is alleged to be the threat in context. If it includes conditions, that is something that must be considered in determining whether it's a true threat. But there have been many conditional statements that have been found to be true threats. It, again, depends on the context
right.
in which they're stated.
And in this context,
so it's not an automatic.
No,
thing,
of course not.
If there are conditions, then it's not a true threat.
No, but within this particular context, when you look at what is he responding to, he's responding to true love conquers all problems. And as a society, that's what we're told, right? That you want true love, and true love will be the butterflies and the fairy tales, and everything will be fantastic. There's a within
but
that.
But I'm going to go to a mall and shoot 20 people. I mean. You know, and looking at your other case, I mean, in looking at the cases you sent to us, you know, the St. Louis the football case, I mean, I certainly agree with you. Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, and I guess in my density, I didn't even understand that the pressure cooker was going to be a bomb. I thought it was just, you're going to, I mean, you know, do whatever you do. But, you know, that one, no one is saying, I mean, okay, what if in that one he said the same things, but, and I'm going to put 20 pounds of explosive in that pressure cooker, and when I'm at the game, if my side loses, kablooey.
Yeah, much closer case.
I mean, that'd be
case.
Bad.
Because
right?
in the context, he's talking about something that's direct, that he's going to do, that's very specific. I mean, I think the closer you get to specifics, the closer you are to true threat. The farther you get from specifics and the more vague it is and the more it's outside of a context that you would expect to have some sort of threat, then it's not a true threat.
You sent us some additional reading material, and what I notice is that the cases that you're citing, both Betzer and Metzinger, if I'm pronouncing them correctly, have to do with First Amendment challenges, but you're not raising that with this court.
No.
You did raise it with the district court, but that isn't a part of your appeal as far as this provision being overbroad.
No, because the law is very clear that as a matter of law, it's only a true threat that can be criminalized. We don't need to go into whether the statute is overbroad or whether it's vague, neither of which were actually raised below. It's a much simpler and much cleaner and much more effective argument to say exactly what I'm saying, which is, as a matter of law, within this context, would a reasonable person reading this perceive it to be a threat? And would it cause extreme fear? And in this context, subjectively, the police did, because of their experience at the Crossroads Mall. He's not referencing the Crossroads Mall. He's not even referencing anything remotely about St. Cloud. We're on a national dating website where he's responding to true love in a contrarian fashion, in perhaps an offensive fashion, but that's what he's doing. That's the context. That's not me making an argument. That's actually what happened. So for the state to try and do a couple of things, which is one, to pull these couple of sentences out of the entire context, and also to inject this subjective idea of what he meant, neither one of those are supported by the law. It is an objective standard.
So, counsel, it is an objective standard, and you're suggesting that the police response and the meet me response are subjective, and that confuses me because we have evidence of what, in fact, they did in response.
So what they're subjective.
I understand that their subjective interpretation of the post wouldn't certainly, as a matter of law, establish that your client's post was a true threat. But it is evidence. And that's my question to you, is given that the state had this evidence of the objective response to your client's post, isn't that enough to get them, you know, going back to your issue, isn't that enough to make this a jury issue as to on the point?
Well, again, I would say meet me. We have two different parties acting. Meet me said, hey, you need to look at this. There wasn't a decision about what it was, just this is concerning. And I agree, it's concerning. The police officers, yes, there was an objective decision to investigate, but they were very clear about the reason why. Oh, my gosh, 18 months earlier, we had this mass stabbing at the Crossroads Mall.
Crossroads Mall is the only indoor mall in St. Cloud. As on this record, that's what it says. It could be wrong, counsel, but that was the evidence offered at trial.
Well, but again, and I don't mean to parse words with you or argue with you, but you just inserted a word that, again, is not in his post. His post doesn't talk about an indoor mall. His post talks about a mall, and it talks about all these things that if you read it together,
Where's an outdoor mall? I mean,
well, Albertville is partly an outdoor mall.
The
shops in Egan are partly outdoor. I'm just saying that, you know, the thing is that we have to be very careful not to read into this that he's talking about the Crossroads Mall when he doesn't reference that mall. And he's not in a local site specific to St. Cloud. There's no evidence of that. This is a dating site with headquarters in New Jersey. That is what we know. We also know that it's in response to true love solving all the problems. And he's saying, hey, no, it really doesn't, dudes.
Counsel, I want to make sure that I hear from you on the second issue.
Sure.
But I did notice that in response to your brief, the state raised the sort of supplemental issue, or they call it a threshold issue, saying that the first Fourth Amendment analysis that the district court came to is we don't even need to go there because this wasn't a search. This is information
sure.
that the police obtained information that the defendant willfully and voluntarily turned over to a third party. So would you respond
sure.
to that? Because I didn't see a written response,
sure.
and I
No, I think because it's an easy response to articulate here at oral argument, which is the state's raising a new argument of standing. The Supreme Court is very clear that you can't raise standing for the first time on appeal. The state had...
Well, I don't know that. I've seen that, and you're probably much more expert than I am on this point. I don't recall seeing this as identified as a standing issue in our Minnesota law.
Garza, and I apologize to counsel, but Garza v. State very clearly says that. So the state, you know, was on notice that there was this Fourth Amendment issue. There was a contested omnibus hearing. The parties briefed the issue. At no time did the state raise this issue of standing. And perhaps if this was a purely legal issue, then the state's footnote would be correct. But there are factual matters that need to be addressed in terms of what is the privacy policy with MeetMe and Nucor. What was communicated to Mr. Rizek? What did he understand his privacy, the privacy policy to be? We don't know any of that. And the state had ample opportunity to...
I'm curious, counsel. I mean, you're making a lot of points that would be interesting to think about. We didn't get a reply brief from you. So is this a situation where you think you need the opportunity to submit supplemental briefing?
Absolutely not, because I think Garza is very clear. If there is a factual matter that still needs to be developed, then you can't raise it for the first time on appeal, especially when it has to do with standing, which is what Garza is and which is what the state is arguing. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Senecal. You will have rebuttal if you wish to exercise it. We'll now hear from counsel for the state, please.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Michael Everson. I am an assistant attorney general, and I am appearing today on behalf of the respondent, State of Minnesota. In this case, appellant posted on MeetMe using an account in which he listed his hometown as St. Cloud, Minnesota, a statement that included the phrase, I quote, "I will shoot up a mall, killing at least 20 people and killing myself." That is a threat to commit a crime of violence with purpose to cause terror or in reckless disregard of the risk of causing terror to another. And the state agrees that context absolutely matters whenever we look at whether a statement is a threat. And when I read the statement that was posted, "You cannot tell me what to do. I will find a soulmate, seduce her. I'll be cruel to her. I will be bonded to her." What I read and what I think objectively comes out of that statement is we have a person who is angry. We have a person who is angry about love, a person who is somewhat unhinged, and a lot of his post doesn't make a lot of sense, but the one sentence in there...
I would agree with you on both points. He's, yeah. I think... I would read it that way, but let's look at from appellant's and Ms. Senecal Hill's point. Okay, true love can't conquer everybody. You can't tell me what to do. I will find a soulmate. Okay, so that presumes that he's got to find one first. I will seduce her, and he'll salute. And so, if he finds a soulmate, he'll seduce her, and then she'll leave me. So, if I find a soulmate, I'll seduce her, then she'll leave me, and then I'll shoot up a mall. Doesn't that all depend on whether he finds the soulmate to begin with? Which, based on this post at MeetMe, I'd be curious to see how many people said, yeah, let's go out for coffee.
If you take the literal meaning of what's here, but what's important is what he's saying simply doesn't make a lot of sense. It reflects somebody who, you know, like I said before, is a little bit unhinged. And the only sentence in this entire post that makes any sense to me is, "I will shoot up a mall, killing at least 20 people and killing myself."
It may make sense to you, counsel, but it's not very specific. And that's the other point that I hear appellant's counsel making, is this is a post that's going on a message board, dating website. It doesn't say anything about Minnesota. I mean, yes, we end up learning that this is posted by someone from Minnesota, from St. Cloud. That's not in the post itself. It's not something that the reader of the post is going to know.
My understanding of the record is that he had a MeetMe profile, and the MeetMe profile listed his hometown as Minnesota, as St. Cloud. And
that information was conveyed to the police, which is what led them to Crossroads Mall. But it's not in the post, right?
It's not in this.
When I look at Minnesota case law, you know, that has imposed, upheld convictions for either terroristic threats or threats of violence, as we have here, those are pretty specific threats. I mean, specific as to particular victims, although I don't think that's required. It can be a group of people.
Correct.
Shooting up a mall could certainly be such a thing. but it's usually a lot more particular than what we have here. Some inference of time frame, location, a greater, and I think what just Judge Connolly's question was getting at is the sort of sense that this really is an imminent threat, where what you're telling me is this post doesn't make sense. I mean, it seems almost silly, sophomoric in a way, and probably because he's responding to this true love thing.
Well, I think it reflects, or a reasonable reading of this post is, this is somebody who potentially has mental health issues. This is somebody who is very angry about love. And that, I mean, to me, the post is more of a threat in context than it would be standing by itself. Because this is somebody, I mean, this post reflects the type of language that I think most people would assume somebody who is going to go in and shoot up a mall, killing 20 people, would use. And the record does reflect, and it's my understanding that this is accurate, that there is only one mall in St. Cloud. It's the Crossroads Mall. I think we also have to ask ourselves.
Well, from the context of the post. That's what I'm trying to get you to focus on.
Oh,
this post is very general.
Sure. It's my understanding from the record that a person can look at appellant's profile on meetme.com, and that profile lists his hometown as St. Cloud, Minnesota.
Not introduced into evidence, not that I could see in this transcript.
It's my understanding, and I very well could be wrong, but I thought one of the officers had testified that information was available.
The information, but the profile itself was not posted as a sort of, you know, read the post, read the profile, right? We don't have evidence was not submitted to the jury.
Correct. We do not have the profile itself. What we have is the post. But, you know, again, I would submit nothing in the threats of violence statute requires that a threat be to a specific mall as opposed to a threat to shoot up a mall, killing 20 people and killing myself. Because what the statute...
No, you're certainly right. The test is, I think, what I referred to earlier, at least from the U.S. Supreme Court. So the statement has to be something that creates a reasonable apprehension that the defendant will act. And
correct.
Again, going back to the earlier line of questioning from Judge Connolly, I mean, this is a statement where you ask yourself, you know, what's going on here? This guy is lovelorn. He is trying to undercut the proposition that true love conquers all and comes up with this hyperbole of an example for why true love doesn't conquer all. So is that really a true threat? I mean, we are supposed to ask that question under the First Amendment.
Correct. Yes, and I you know, again, this is a true threat. And I think the threats of violence statute is consistent with what is a true threat as that's defined by the United States Supreme Court. You know, he is making a statement that he is going to shoot up a mall, kill 20 people.
Contingent on, as Judge Connolly said, all of these things happening. First of all, him finding this love.
And good luck with that.
If a reasonable person read this post, a reasonable person would be alarmed. I would be alarmed. I would be very concerned that a person would be going to a mall to shoot up a mall.
Well, I'd be worried about a person's mental health.
When a person says, I am going to shoot up a mall, killing 20 people and killing myself, you know, unfortunately, in today's world, that is a very serious threat. That sort of thing happens all the time. And, you know, we see all kinds of cases where a shooter has posted online statements before the shooting reflective of anger and suggesting that something is going to happen. And here he's saying, I will shoot up a mall, killing 20 people and killing myself. And when you look at it in the context of the whole statement, this is indicative of the type of person I think most reasonable people would be concerned that he would act on this threat. And it is an extremely serious threat. So when we apply the statutory language, we are required to show that there's a threat to commit any crime of violence with purpose to terrorize another or in reckless disregard of the risk of causing such terror. Let's look at the response of the police, the response of meetme.com. The record reflects that this is the first time law enforcement in St. Cloud has ever received a report of a threat from any social media company, and that's at page 25 of the trial transcript. So this obviously was taken very seriously by MeetMe. The St. Cloud police obviously considered this to be a very serious threat. They posted officers, I believe it was one squad, at the mall, and they urgently, they dropped, the testimony was they dropped everything in an effort to locate this individual. This was clearly a threat to commit a crime of violence that was made with purpose or in reckless disregard of the risk of causing such terror.
Counsel, I don't want to suggest that I don't take the evidence that that was offered at trial about the response to this statement in any way very serious, but I think the appellant makes a valid point that the objectives of MeetMe and of the police department are different from the law when we
correct.
Protect First Amendment rights.
Correct.
So the police are going to assess statements differently from the way this court is under the U.S. Constitution. So in light of that, what's your best evidence? And maybe it's a case. I mean, I look for them myself, a case here in Minnesota or outside where there was a similar type of general and that's, again, the lack of specificity in the threat as well as the overall context being a true love, dating kind of angst type post that concerns me. You know, do you have a similar scenario where the subjective intent of the person was harmless, but it is interpreted outside, in this case by law enforcement, as a serious threat?
You know, I can't think of a specific case. I couldn't find a specific case that has this type of post where it's clear that this, at least the post manifests that the individual is dealing with anger, that, you know, again, I use the term the individual is a little unhinged. But what the statute requires and what, frankly, the First Amendment requires is for a state to criminalize these types of threat, that we have a threat that is made with the purpose to cause terror in another or in reckless disregard of that risk. And I would submit that any time you post on a dating website, and you know, who do you access on dating websites? Usually people who live near you. When you post on a dating website this sort of kind of bizarre, unhinged rant and put in the middle of it, you know, the only real clear statement in here, I will shoot up a mall, killing at least 20 people and killing myself, that's a threat of violence. I think we also have to ask, why did appellant pick a mall as the place he was going to target? And the reason, or the inference is he picked a mall because there had been a recent high-profile mass act of violence at the mall. Received quite a bit of media attention. Correct. Correct, and had received quite a bit of media attention at the time. So,
just watching your time, and I think I understand your point.
Okay.
I don't mean to cut you off, but
absolutely.
I'm making sure that you have a chance to respond to appellant's point on the second issue.
Sure.
So
now,
you would like us to look at a threshold issue, whether this was a search. That is not an issue that the state raised.
Correct.
The court didn't consider it. You, of course, know that we rarely consider an issue for the first time on appeal.
Correct. And I will just note, if this court declines to consider the issue, we strongly believe we win on the merits of the exigent circumstances. However, there is an exception. It's sort of outlined in State versus Grunied. There's three sort of prongs that need to be met. It sounds like the disputed prong here is whether there's inadequate factual record. And in fact, the case that counsel for appellant cites, Garza versus State, the reason that the Supreme Court in that case declined to consider the standing issue is because there had not been an opportunity for the state to develop a factual record. And my recollection of that case was it involved a house and the extent to which a person has had a connection to the house. In this case, we are dealing with a purely legal question as to whether a person has a reasonable expectation of privacy in his IP address and his subscriber information. And we cite a number of federal circuit cases. I believe we also cite an unpublished opinion of this court that clearly says, no, there is no reasonable expectation of privacy in the mere...
Those are federal cases, right?
Correct. We do not.
And our Minnesota Supreme Court has taken up a similar issue in looking at whether the information that someone provides to a hotel registry is something that there is an expectation of privacy in or not. And I seem to recall there might even be a question there as to whether the record is sufficient to reach that determination. I mean, how familiar are you with that case? We're all waiting to hear what the Supreme Court has to say. We've already ruled on the issue.
Yeah, I'm not, to be honest with you, familiar with the particular facts of this of that case. But here, again, the consistent ruling of every federal circuit that has considered this has held no reasonable expectation of privacy. I see my time has expired. We would ask this panel to affirm. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Everson. Ms. Senecal, you'll have the last word, please.
I'm worried that I was a little too hasty. If the court would like me to provide supplemental briefing, I would be happy to do that. I do think Garza is very clear about not being able to raise standing for the first time on appeal, and counsel is wrong that it's not a purely legal issue. Yes, there is federal case law that talks about generally this type of information. There may not be a privacy interest, but as Judge Bradfield has pointed out, Minnesota hasn't addressed this issue. And we also have the open question about what is MeetMe's policy in terms of privacy and protection of information? What is Nucor's policy? We know from the record that MeetMe at least required the state to either submit a, from the contested omnibus hearing, we know that MeetMe either required the state to provide a search warrant or to establish that there was an exigency. So there is, in terms of MeetMe's policy, there is some sort of protection that it affords, and what was communicated to Mr. Rizak in terms of what that protection would be. So it's not a purely legal issue. It's a factual issue that needs to be developed. The state had ample opportunity to do that at trial in terms of being on notification of the issue.
Assuming, this was a search, why isn't the exception of exigent circumstances can be based on a single factor, including when there is a compelling need to take quick action for the protection of human life? I mean, it seems to me this is a textbook example of that, isn't it? I mean, if you believe it's a search.
Well, and also if you believe that you can just take those two sentences out of context, I'm going to go shoot up a mall.
If the police didn't act on this, I would imagine the chief of police and everyone on duty that day, well, I certainly would have tried to fire them all.
I mean, particularly
given the fact that there was at a mall in St. Cloud, there was a serious stabbing that made the front. I mean, this is the stuff we want the police to act on every time, particularly, in this day and age, where this. Getting to that sort of second point, you want us to focus on context, and I agree. That's very important. Mr. Everson said, in the context of today's times, when there are mass shootings everywhere, shouldn't we take that in context, too, that if you do something like this on a Facebook, it's or a MeetMe page or whatever public website, how could anyone in today's day and age not know that putting something like that on a website, I will shoot up a mall killing at least 20 people and killing myself, that is not going to raise a reasonable apprehension that, a mass murder will occur and therefore you're stuck.
Okay, I have 2 minutes to unpack all of that, and I will do my best. In terms of the police investigating and acting, I don't take issue with them acting. I take issue with them acting out of the confines of the law. They, you know, they needed a warrant or they needed exigency. I fully briefed why there wasn't the exigency, and I stand by that. You know, this idea from the officer that, well, if we give them a search warrant, it's going to take months. Well, clearly it didn't take months because they got the information almost immediately. So there was a way to do this within the confines of the law. In terms of the, in today's society, we just can never say that. That's part of the reason why I sent this court the Metzinger decision, because the state's argument basically was, you can't joke about setting off a pressure cooker after the Boston Marathon. And really, it goes back to, again, what I said about rising and falling on context. Yes, generally that's an offensive thing to say and probably something that you shouldn't say, but you still have to look at it within the context. And in terms of how could anyone not know that you shouldn't reference shooting up a mall, well, the state answered that question for you because the state talks about how this doesn't make any sense. He sounds angry. He sounds like he has mental health issues. He's bizarre. He's unhinged. That to me sounds like negligence, perhaps. But if that's
There's
really
no
true...
There's no one with a mental health issue ever commits a crime of violence.
Well, that true. That is not true. I agree with that. But you still have to look at whether it's a true threat in the context of how it was written, where it was written, why it was written. And for those reasons, I ask you to reverse his conviction. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much, Ms. Senecal Hill. Thank you very much, Mr. Everson. The matter is submitted. Please give my warmest regards to Ms. Rankin, Ms. Senecal. Thank you, and wish her a happy Thanksgiving, and the same to both of you. Our final case this morning is, I hope I pronounced this right, Cynthia Linneruth versus Gerald Linneruth. If you could approach the podiums.